Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we have an exciting post-ADA episode where it's been a really big week for new approvals in pediatrics. So several new approvals. We had previously talked about Afrezza inhaled insulin gaining the approval in peds, which has been really big. But just hot off the press, now we have an expanded indication for Tzield, teplizumab, which prior to this was FDA approved for stage 2 type 1 diabetes to prevent the progression to stage 3. But now we have an expanded indication to people with stage 3 pediatrics. So, Natalie, I'll turn it over to you to share a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. This is really exciting because it's harder to find people with stage 2 type 1 diabetes, right? You have to be screening them and because they're asymptomatic. And the ADA has said over the past several years, start screening first degree relatives, those at higher risk with other autoimmune diseases like autoimmune thyroid disease, like celiac disease. Those people have a higher risk of developing type 1. Except we really mostly find people diagnosed with new stage 3 type 1 in the hospital with DKA or at a pediatric screening for a lot of these kids, right? They go for a urine test for a soft ultraman, or they start developing early symptoms of polyuria, polydipsia, polyphagia. So 900 patients receive Tzield within the first 6 weeks of diagnosis. So that first time they found high glucose. And of those 900 people, they were given Tzield in a different way. So one of our biggest frustrations in Tzield now is the weekend infusions. So what they did was they said, could we get this done in 12 days instead of 14 days? So the drug is indicated to delay the onset of or slow down the progression of stage 3, right? When we have stage 3 type 1 diabetes, most people have a little bit of beta cell function left, don't they? And we know that because they end up in what we call a honeymoon, right? We fix that glucose toxicity. The beta cell function seem to go, oh, I'm here again. I can do this. And insulin needs go down. Sometimes they go away altogether for a brief period of time. So the Tzield is infused in those first 6 weeks, 12 days instead of 14. So you start on a Monday, you miss that second weekend, which is wonderful for families. And then 6 months later, an additional 12 days. So pretty exciting. I mean, Aaron Kowalski's quoted, we now have novel therapy that targets the autoimmune progression nature of stage 3 type 1. He's the CEO of Breakthrough Type 1. So how did Tzield get approved in this trial called the PROTECT trial? Phase 3 PROTECT study included children and adolescents age 8 to 17 years within 6 weeks of diagnosis with stage 3 or clinical type 1 diabetes, one or more type 1 associated autoantibodies, and C-peptide. So remember what C-peptide is. It's the residual of insulin production, endogenous insulin production. So we can tell if someone's still making insulin or not by the measure of C-peptide. The people that were enrolled in this study had at least 0.2 or greater measurement of C-peptide. So that we need to remember because we can't preserve something that doesn't exist. Occasionally, we do diagnose someone with literally no C-peptide left. It's not going to work to delay anything if we can't preserve those beta cells. So they were randomized to receive either Tzield or the placebo, and for those two 12-day courses. So within the 6 weeks of diagnosis of stage 3 type 1, and then 6 months later, another 12-day course of infusion. So at week 78, 95% of participants in the teplizumab group maintained peak C-peptide levels greater than 0.2. That is amazing to me. Patients treated with teplizumab also achieved significant higher stimulated C-peptide levels than patients receiving the placebo. So remember what that means, right? So when we stimulate C-peptide, what do? We have someone consume a high carbohydrate meal and see what happens. Are the beta cells responding or not? to me, this is really important because it's helping that person maintain glucoses more in the normal or euglycemic range. That's the whole idea of this preservation. How's that? Did you like that?
That's great. Yeah. So I think that clinically, I mean, this is a huge deal, right? Because like you mentioned, it is really hard to catch people in that stage two. It requires screening, which we need to be doing more of, but also catching them when they're in stage two before they progress to stage three, which can sometimes just be challenging. So now we've got a therapy we can offer people at new diagnosis, which I think is going to be just so much easier to catch people because pretty much we can offer this when they're diagnosed. And unfortunately, many people are diagnosed still in DKA, but at least we have something we can offer them. I think, though, you know, we'll have to really figure out the logistics of this because we need, you know, there is a ticking timeline, right? Like we need to make sure this is offered pretty soon after diagnosis. And then we do also need to make sure we can match that 6 months later, they are getting that second infusion, and both are 12 days in this case. So it does require, you know, probably maybe missing school and just kind of planning those logistics will be really important for families to think about when they're pursuing this medication.
And I think the other thing is we're going to find more stage one and two type one diabetes, because when you have a child diagnosed and, you know, quite possibly in the hospital in DKA, it's a really great opportunity to say, let's screen your children. Let's screen the parents. I have a couple of parents right now that I follow that have early stage one type one diabetes that haven't converted, that are just, you know, adult onset tends to be a little bit slower than peds. And so they were screened as part of the family screening at diagnosis. Now that there's a treatment for stage three type one, I believe that more people will be willing to screen right at that diagnosis point to say, look, we're going to use this for one person. We have this as a drug that we can use for other family members if they're early stage type one. Let's get you all screened right now. And I'm really excited about that because people are hesitant to screen. It's a scary time for a family. I see adults, and adults are like, I don't want my child to have this. I can't know. And not knowing doesn't change what's happening. And you and I both have had chronic diseases and things happen in our families in the last handful of years. And both of us have had to make screening decisions and do things differently and face the reality of that. And I think that in and of itself really brings home the, okay, we actually have treatment now. We have treatment for stage two type one and early stage three type one. So I'm excited. I think it's going to change the face of some people with diabetes.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very exciting. And to just think, right, it can really help to preserve that insulin function and make their hopefully several initial years of type one diabetes just much smoother and easier to manage. Some of the kind of interesting things about this will be, I wonder if it will change people's decisions in terms of deciding to get TZLed at stage two or stage three, if there's a choice. I think for a lot of people, there's unfortunately not a choice because they may not know until they're stage three. And then it's a no-brainer. It's like, well, if we can get TZLed, great. But for those that are screened and then do have that choice to still get in stage two, my hunch is kind of that would still be preferred just because then you can hopefully delay that progression to stage three. And then by the time they develop stage three, hopefully there will be even other therapies that they would be eligible for. But at this moment in time, we have nobody studied that got it in stage two and again in stage three. So it's really not recommended to use in that way. And I don't think insurance would likely cover it that way, at least right now.
Yeah, I mean, we have no idea, right? I will say that in this preserving that C-peptide, why do we care, right? There is, we call it metabolic memory. And if we can reduce the hypoglycemia, if we can have improved glucose stability, ultimately, we believe long-term that early initiation of very tight glucose management, we used to call it glucose control, but we don't want to use that word. It's not control, but we bring everything down because we're having the body make its own insulin still. That metabolic memory, that's what DCCT showed us, follow-up edict, right? that the people that were in that intensive management group, right? They wore pumps, they checked their glucoses four or more times a day. Remember, in the early days of diabetes, before DCCT or even during, the standard of care was twice a day glucose checking. There were no CGMs, there was nothing. And even those people that were managed more tightly, those people in the EDICT study follow-up have reductions in, and their A1Cs come back up after DCCT is over. And we look at those two groups now, the group that got that intensive management and the group that didn't. And the group that got the intensive management has had less heart attacks, less strokes, less microvascular disease, even though the average person was in the DCCT 6.5 years. So the whole idea of this is preserving those beta cells to help people stay tight as long as possible to reduce the risk of long-term complications. We're looking at kids for this from 8 to 17 years old. These are young kids. They have a whole lifetime of type 1 in front of them. This is really important.
Yeah, they certainly do. And I guess just thinking about it, I guess for some of the younger kids, it would definitely be, I guess, preferable if they could be caught in stage 2 because of the age range of this, you have to be 8. Some would be eligible in stage, I forgot now, what is the age for teplizumab for stage 2? It's down to 1. Okay, I'll just redo that. So for younger kids, it definitely would be great if we could catch them in stage 2 because teplizumab or Tzield for stage 2 goes down to 1 year old. So they'd be eligible at 1 versus if they're not and they develop stage 3 earlier, they unfortunately would not be eligible for this right now because the existing age cutoff is 8 years old. So I guess that's like another consideration with screening and everything.
I mean, it is part of the ADA guideline to screen. And I believe that as we see more families come in for education at early stage 3, we will catch more willing to screen. The same families that will want to infuse early in stage 3 will probably want their other children screened. So, I mean, and this is a huge potential to increase the number of screenings. And for those families that have children that have either they're already past their 6-week diagnosis mark, or they're, you know, concerned, or they're in between, there are other studies. Right? There are other studies to enroll in. And I think a couple of years ago, one of my good friends and your friend, Anastasia Albanese O'Neill over at Breakthrough said, "Natalie, I can't fill my studies. We have funding, we have studies, and it takes us a long time to get these studies done because families won't be in trials." To me, this is a true opportunity too. We screen people and we offer them trials for other medications. There's lots of things coming. And I have the Breakthrough Find a Study in my search engine all the time. And I pull it up and I say, this is how to do this. This is what this is for. Because they're looking for studies, not just for preventing, delaying, you know, but also all kinds of other things about treatment of diabetes and its complications for people with type 1 diabetes. So I highly encourage you to explore it yourself. Pretend you have type 1 diagnosed at whatever age, and here you are, look for studies. You can see how close and how far they are away. This is really important. We can't progress without trying new drugs, and we can't do that without people enrolling in studies.
Yeah, no, definitely. Great, great point. So yeah, hopefully this will increase screening family members, the diagnosis. And I'm just going to be so curious, the insurance coverage piece of this, because the insurance coverage has been really good for stage 2. I mean, I feel like if we can catch someone and through the help of Sanofi, we've really been able to get people that want this therapy to be able to get it. So we'll see how it goes for stage 3. Hopefully, you would think with the FDA approval, it would hopefully be similar as long as we can get them in that window with the new diagnosis and everything.
Yeah, I think that we've had no problems with, I think we've done more infusions than even you guys have, and we've had zero problems with copays across the board. Medicaid, I mean, we've not infused a Medicare patient, to be honest with you, but Medicaid and private insurance has covered this medication for people. We've set it up through McDonald House so that families can come if they need to, if they live far away, so that, and that, you know, They offer schooling there. They do all the things to set the stage for this to work well for families. So we're excited.
Yeah, no, that's great. And then I guess, you know, working in adults, we hope that we'll start to get some data in adults to support an indication, because right now, if someone were to get diagnosed at age 18 or higher, which is pretty common, actually, that we have people in their early 20s diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And of course, you and I see people like into their 80s getting diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, but hopefully we'll see that. But this is a great start. We're very excited for all the pediatric patients now that may be eligible.
And now, what about our new another peds? I mean, I don't think we've ever had an episode on pediatric, because we haven't had that much going on at any one given time. So the next big thing in peds this week is that the FDA cleared for marketing the first over-the-counter continuous glucose monitor for children, Dexcom Stelo. Interesting. Indicated for people 2 years older who do not use insulin. The FDA previously cleared Stelo glucose biosensor, they call it. They don't call it continuous glucose sensor because it doesn't read every 5 minutes like the Dexcom G6, G7 do for individuals age 18 and over back in March of 2024. So Stelo's been out now since March of 2024. And here in 2026, the indication was for 2 years and older who do not use insulin. Diana, talk to me. What do you think?
So I'm really excited about this because, of course, we are seeing in peds that there's increased rates of overweight and obesity and increased rates of prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. And of course, insurance coverage just really varies for CGM. I mean, unfortunately, when someone's on insulin, often it's going to be covered. But when they're not on insulin, often the coverage it can be limited. And certainly in the case of prediabetes, it's likely not going to be covered. So the fact that now there's an OTC option that is cleared for use in peds, I think is absolutely wonderful and will make this technology more accessible and hopefully then able to make a real impact in this population. I think one thing to note is in peds, the wear time is sometimes not as good as it is in adults, meaning it is designed for 15 days and that hasn't changed. But when you compare, for example, to like the Dexcom G7, right now, the 15-day is only for adults and the 10-day is still for peds. And they did, in their kind of press release with this announcement, they did say that sometimes the sensors don't last as long in kids. So that's just something to kind of be weary of. But I think still, I mean, even if you're getting 10 to 12 days out of it, that's wonderful. And the technology will really, really help.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, and so now we can increase access. I mean, cost, we can still talk about cost because this is over the counter, guys. You go buy this at, you know, well, you order it right now at Stelo.com, but ultimately consider it over the counter. Like you would go buy acetaminophen or ibuprofen, right? You can decide that you want this. So people could have bought them for their children before now, but it wasn't indicated. So that's first thing, right? Anyone can have access to it. I could get one for my mom and use mine. It doesn't, right? This is over the counter. But the other thing is that they used real world evidence to support this regulatory decision-making, which I love. Dexcom and the FDA used previous clinical study data from peds and adults, along with real world evidence derived from real world data, because when you have a Dexcom app, whether it's Stelo or G7, you can elect to have your data. We look at that data. They look at that data. So real world on current ICGM among both groups, adults and peds, to understand expected delivery performance in these pediatric users. So think about that. This is really impressive. This is using technology to improve our lives where we don't have to go back and start from zero and gain all of this clinical evidence and then pay for a study and then do these things. We can go backwards and look at real world evidence, which is wonderful news.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, versus having to do like some type of randomized control study, this makes a lot of sense. I mean, based on kind of who's been studied and the real world data. So I think this is wonderful. This is another win for peds. And yeah, I'm super excited about it. Just a reminder, though, for anyone on insulin, we'd ideally prefer them to have the prescription devices just because they have alerts for hypoglycemia. Stelo actually does not show readings below 70, and it doesn't alert when you go below 70. So it's just a good reminder. This is really designed for people on non-insulin therapies or people just not on medications that just want to see the impacts of food and activity and everything on their glucose levels.
Absolutely. One of the things we love the most about Dexcom G6-7, we still have a few weeks left of G6, right? We need to talk about end life at some point. The G6 is going away, right? At the July 1st, they are stopping production of G6. But the G7 10-day and 15-day have what we call a predictive low glucose alert, where it will tell you, hey, you're 128, but you're going to be low, so you can treat it, right, ahead of time and avoid that low glucose. The person using a Dexcom Stelo, whether an adult or peds, should not be on glucose-lowering agents that would cause hypoglycemia. So that would be insulin. And for adults, it's sulfonylureas, right? We would like it. The best thing to do is to have those extra feature alerts that Dexcom offers in their G7 product that are not available in Stelo. The beauty of that is, let's say someone's on a metformin and a GLP-1. There was just data at ADA on the use of Dexcom in adults. Now, this is kind of merging two different discussions, but in adults that actually demonstrated people on non-hypoglycemic agents improving their A1Cs tremendously, tremendously, even though they're not on agents that we're concerned about lows. So this is where I see Stelo in peds, is that it's going to help people make nutritional decisions, go, this makes me high. I should probably either eat less of it or exercise more or combine it with other foods. This is where I see this helping people, peds as well as adults with Stelo. I'm excited.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then kind of the last thing, which we already talked about, but just wanted to include it again in this episode, is the fact that inhaled insulin got the FDA approval in peds. So 6 years and over, it has the approval. And that is really big. This is huge, right? That basically in the last week or two, having now Stelo approved, having teplizumab for new stage 3 type 1 diabetes and peds, and then now having inhaled insulin as an option as well. So it's been, you know, a really big week, really exciting. Of course, you know, I think the one thing to keep in mind, at least with the inhaled insulin, is just some peds practices may be more ready than others. Not that it's so hard. I mean, it's a prescription, right? A prescription that you send to the pharmacy, and the company's actually made it really easy where in the first year, or, you know, it shouldn't be more than $35. But there's that one little thing of that FEV1 that you need to blow into it and get a baseline FEV1, which is a really simple test. But of course, that practices need to be set up to make sure that they do it and figure out who's going to do it and how they document it, which should be simple, but we need to make sure that's happening.
Yeah, I think the answer to that is it's going to take a little bit of time, right? I mean, the Afrezza for peds has been out for or approved now for 2 weeks. Some practices, like, we get FEV1s from Mankind. They send them to us, right? So a person can do them right there. They're disposable. We have one little machine. We have these two that people blow into this machine. And we're good to go, right? But just scheduling those and getting them done in between visits if families want it right away, for example, number one. Or number two, what are we going to do with kids that are already pumping and they're on an AID? And the practice says, we don't really know how we want kids dosing with those kinds of things yet, right? I mean, we can use it, you know, Afrezza. I have people that with diabetes that use it, what we call it like emergent. So only when their set goes bad, only when this happens and they're on AID. But there are people out there that might want to use it, and some AIDs might be not as friendly to having extra insulin on board for different reasons. So I think it's going to take a little bit of time for practices. They're going to have to schedule a meeting and say, hey, what do we want? How do we want to do this? Are we only going to prescribe the lowest dose? Is it going to be weight-based? How do we decide? And so because there are centers that have never seen Afrezza or used it because it wasn't pediatrically approved, I think it's going to take a little bit of time to kind of come to fruition with how do they prescribe it, what they're going to do, and then we'll go from there. I know that people are excited about it. I also know, when we think about Afrezza, that, you know, adult that adult feedback, even from adult practitioners, has always been, oh, I know, but what about the lungs? What are we going to, you know, what are we doing? And I think PEDS approval will help people say, all right, now it's approved in PEDS. That really does demonstrate safety, doesn't it? So to me, that's a big deal across the board for wider use of this medication.
Yeah, that's a great point, right? People should feel more confident if it's going to be used in PEDS. And they did test the FEV1 and show there actually wasn't a decline in the trial done in PEDS. So in terms of safety, it's looking very promising. And yeah, I mean, to your point with AID use, that is like a new emerging area. And so some practices may not feel as comfortable, but at least offering this now as a choice for people that are on MDI, that's kind of a no-brainer. It's like if someone wants to switch out their mealtime injection with Afrezza, that really should be an option, or even using it as rescue, like you said. I mean, that should be offered. And so hopefully we will see practices really like step up.
Embrace this and do this. Yeah. Yep, it's time. I mean, you know, and the ADA guidelines do say that we should be offering Afrezza, you know, technosphere insulin, which is what it's technically called. But, Mankind is the manufacturer. Afrezza is the only brand. So Afrezza insulin to people that want to, we just got to get the insulin in, right? That's always our belief. You and I together, I don't care if you wear a pump. I don't care if you use Afrezza. I don't care if you inject. I don't care. I just want it in your body because it doesn't work when it's sitting in a vial or a pen on the counter. So the best way to get it in, the highest time and range, the least number of hypoglycemic events or even hypoglycemic irritations, that's our goal, right? So PEDS is going to come around. It's going to take a little bit of time, especially if they weren't. Our PEDS center was in the trial and they're like, let's go. But they were in the trial. So they're ready, right? Other places who haven't been in, who haven't done the trials, who don't use it in their adult practices or don't use it very often, maybe a little bit less gung-ho about this. But it's time. It's time to, okay, this has changed. We need to move with the times as quickly as possible.
Definitely. And then to your point about the dosing. So initially it is the 4-unit. I mean, it's the 4, 8, and 12-unit cartridges, same that we have for adults, but they are studying the 2-unit cartridges. So that is something that could come in the future. So yep, stay tuned.
We're excited about that, right? Yeah.
Yes. So, all right. Well, lots of excitement in the pediatric space. So thanks for tuning in. That wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.
Thanks, everyone.